In the highest profile crypto blowup to date, FTX filed for bankruptcy protection in the U.S. last week after traders pulled $6 billion from the platform in 3 days and rival exchange Binance abandoned a rescue deal. A bankruptcy court filing on Thursday for collapsed crypto exchange FTX revealed the findings of new CEO John Wray, who said there was a shocking lack of corporate control and oversight at the company. Wray, who took over from disgraced founder Sam Bankman-Fried and previously oversaw the bankruptcy of Enron, said, quote, "Never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of trustworthy financial information as occurred here." Wray goes on to say, quote, "From compromised systems integrity and faulty regulatory oversight abroad, to the concentration of control in the hands of a very small group of inexperienced, unsophisticated, and potentially compromised individuals, this situation is unprecedented." As the effects of the FTX collapse were felt across the globe, Singapore state investor Temasek Holdings, which invested in FTX, also made reference to Bankman-Fried on Thursday in a statement, saying, quote, "It is apparent from this investment that perhaps our belief in the actions, judgment, and leadership of Sam Bankman-Fried would appear to have been misplaced." Temasek said it would write down the value of its entire investment of $275 million. Other investors, including SoftBank's Vision Fund and Sequoia Capital, have also written down their investments in the exchange to zero.
Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. Well, things are now starting to get really interesting with regards to FTX. Initially, we just thought that the company had got itself into a liquidity crisis. It had run out of cash. It had been using its proprietary coin FTT to fund some of its operations, and it had been lending some of that to Alameda Research. And it just looked like they'd hit the buffers, run out of cash, and it was the end of the road. But John Wray is an extremely experienced bankruptcy practitioner, has gone into the business. He's been appointed as the new chief executive, predominantly just to manage the runoff of the company, to get all of the assets liquidated, to sell everything, and to try and recover as much as possible for the customers and the creditors of FTX. And he's come out with some fairly tasty statements. As you saw in the video clip at the beginning, he said that this is the worst case that he has ever seen. And this is the guy that managed the bankruptcy for Enron. And Enron was the worst fraud in the history of corporate America. So if he's saying that FTX is worse than Enron, this is now shaping up to be the biggest disaster in US corporate history and could become a fraud and criminal case. And two things have become very clear over the course of the last few days. Firstly, this is a highly complicated corporate structure that Sam Bankman-Fried has built up. There are 134 different corporate entities involved in this Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And this is for a company that was only created in 2019. So it shouldn't really be that complicated. It hasn't been making hundreds of acquisitions. But the other thing that's now become clear is that Sam Bankman-Fried was in charge of all the different aspects of this group, and that there was a lot of money being moved backwards and forwards between the different corporate entities. So in today's episode, we'll have a look at the posting that John Wray has made to the courts. We'll have a look at those 134 different companies, because they've been segmented into four different silos. So we'll look at those four different business lines and try to evaluate what's going on. And then we'll look into some of the detail of that posting, because there are a lot of loans and a lot of money that's been disappearing from FTX for non-business reasons. And that's why there's now concerns about potential fraud and potential criminal activity. And John Wray has actually called in the investigators to look into this. So there is a potential that Sam Bankman-Fried could be under criminal investigation. Now, in these videos, I've been talking a lot about Sam Bankman-Fried, and I've shown you some photos, but I've got some footage to share with you today of an interview that he gave recently, talking about whether or not there was a possibility that any of the crypto coins could be Ponzi schemes. So quite an interesting topic, and it'll also give you a chance to actually hear him speak directly. We'll then go on to talk about the financial position, how much money FTX was actually sitting on in terms of all of its customer deposits, what assets it has right now, and what the likely recovery rate is, both for customers of the business and also the investors. You saw at the video at the start that a lot of these investors have already taken a very pessimistic view and written down their exposure. And I'll share with you the information that I've got with regards to how much money has been invested by different funds. It's quite difficult to find that data, but I have got some information. So it's quite interesting to see who put what into the deal and how much they're likely to lose. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of this situation are for the crypto markets and also for the global economy. Because whilst this is a crypto deal, it does have real world impact. The money that's been going in from investors and customers is real money from the real economy. It's not just all make-believe crypto. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. And as always, thank you so much to everybody that has supported the channel. I really appreciate it. So as I mentioned at the start, I thought it'd be interesting to share with you a short extract from an interview that Sam Bankman-Fried gave a long time before all of these problems came to light. So this was when FTX was still a darling of the markets and had a valuation of something in the region of $32 billion.
Can you just explain clearly how common do you think Ponzi schemes are in the crypto lending space? Are there any, for example, on the FTX platform right now?
So The word Ponzi scheme is not a word that I used there. And the reason is that it has some pretty specific meanings, many of which I don't think apply in many of these cases. But to give a more general answer, the thing that I was pointing at, I think, was, you know, how many of these things are basically purely economic with no real potential for a product or a use case outside of speculation over it itself at the end of it, right? How much of this is effectively an empty, you know, product? Because I think that when you have something which is basically an empty product, which I do think is true of some places, some assets in crypto, that is something where there's certainly real crash potential from it, and where there's a lot less utility being brought by it. And so I think that's, you know, a much less healthy, piece of the ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. And I think that by market cap or volume, a pretty small fraction of the crypto ecosystem represents this. By number of assets, however, it is a substantial fraction of it. I think the general pattern that you see is this long tail of assets that has very little usage and is, you know, primarily just speculation. And you have this sort of deeper core, that has much more usage, fewer assets involved, but much higher volume and market cap that has at least a reasonable sense of future usage.
So I think the comments that Sam Bankman-Fried gave in that interview are really interesting. He deliberately avoided the use of Ponzi scheme, so he didn't want to relate that concept to what's happening in crypto. But what he did say was that he believed that there was a difference between crypto that has tangible value, so is being created for a purpose, whether that be a payment mechanism or linked to some other business, and other cryptos that were just being released for purely speculative reasons. And obviously he didn't say that they were Ponzi schemes, but he did say that there was no inherent value in a lot of these coins. And when he was talking about the market, he said that the majority of the value was in the small number of coins that have inherent reasons for use, but there is a large number of other coins that potentially don't have any value. So this is really interesting for somebody who's a market expert, a leader in his field. He was at the forefront of taking this industry forward. He was admitting that the majority by number of the coins out there actually are virtually worthless. So as you saw at the start of the video, John Ray has been appointed as the new chief executive of FTX to manage the orderly sale or breakup of the business. And as part of his investigation, he's divided the company into four different silos. So let's have a look at the detail on that. And this chart is a simplified version of the FTX group, which splits out the business into four different operations. And you can see that John Ray and his team have very nicely color coordinated all of this to make it easier to see. So in green on the left hand side here, we've got the WRS silo, which contains the FTX US business. In yellow, we've got the Alameda Research Silo, which contains the Alameda Crypto Hedge Fund. In orange, we've got the Ventures Silo, which is the FTX Ventures business, whereby they were investing into other crypto businesses. And in purple, we've got the .com silo, which is the main FTX trading platform. This is FTX.com, which was the global brand. And as I said, this is a simplified summary of the group. This chart gives you an indication of the complexity of the legal entities involved. However, even this chart doesn't include every single company because there are 134. So again, this is a simplified version. So it starts to give you a flavor as to how complex this group is, because every one of these boxes is a different company with different people and different assets, potentially even different jurisdictions in terms of where they're located. So it starts to get really difficult to be able to track what's going on, and also to locate the cash and the assets, particularly when you're dealing with crypto. But if we go back to this summary chart, one thing that's really interesting here is to look at the ownership of all these different business lines. And you can see right at the top of this chart is Sam Bankman-Fried, who was the founder and creator of FTX. So you would imagine that he would have had a good shareholding in all the different businesses. But I think what's really interesting here is to look at just how much of all of these businesses he still owned at the point that it went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy. If we start with the WRS silo, this is one of the entities that he raised external investment directly into. You can see here the yellow third-party investors bubble. Those investors owned 22.25% of the business. Sam Bankman-Fried owned 52.99%. Gary Wang, who was his co-founder, owned 16.93%. And Nishad Singh, who was another young crypto expert who'd worked with Sam Bankman-Fried at Alameda Research, owned 7.83%. And the reason that these percentages are important is because it relates directly to company control. So when you have a company, you'll have establishment documents, and those documents will tell you exactly what needs to be done in the event of decisions being made by the company. And generally speaking, most decisions will require a majority vote by the shareholders. So 50.1% would be enough to vote through most things. And as you can see, Sam Bankman-Fried owned more than 50% of the company. So that meant that for the majority of decisions, he could make them on his own. Now, some decisions will require 75% approval from the shareholders. And you can see that between Sam Bankman-Fried, Gary Wang, and Nishad Singh, they owned more than 75%. So therefore, they could vote through virtually anything. Now, there may have been some restrictions in terms of the documentation that were introduced by the third-party investors. They should have done that. If you're putting over $1 billion into a company, you would expect that the company documentation should reflect that and give the investors some influence in terms of what's happening. However, from what we're hearing from John Ray, it looks like Sam Bankman-Fried had complete control over what was happening, and that money was able to be moved between all of these different entities without referring back to any third parties. Now, if we jump over to the right-hand side of this chart and look at the .com silo, which is basically the FTX business globally, excluding the USA, Sam Bankman-Fried actually owned 75% of that. So he didn't even need to call on any of his friends to be able to vote through anything that needed 75% majority voting. And the third-party investors held 25%. Now, between them, the third-party investors shown on this chart invested over $1.8 billion over the course of the last 3 years. And it's incredible to think the funds are happy to give over that amount of money. And let's face it, this is their investors' money. It's not their own personal funds. This is the money that's been given to them by their investors. So they've given over all of that money, and they're happy to let one individual have full control of all of it. If we then look at the venture silo, which is the orange section, this business was set up by FTX to invest into other crypto businesses. So officially, this was seen as being an altruistic way of developing the market, helping smaller businesses to be able to find capital to help them grow. But it was obviously also a way for FTX to be able to benefit from the growth of the market, to make some profit on other people's businesses. And this business itself actually raised $3 billion directly from investors, which it invested into more than 50 companies. So this business itself is a really big entity on a standalone basis. And if we look at the ownership, Sam Bankman-Fried had 67%, which again, in corporate terms, can be an important percentage because some votes need a two-thirds majority. So 67% gives him that individually. Gary Wangone, 23%, and Nishad Singh, 10%. So between them, these three individuals owned 100% of a business that had raised $3 billion. And to put that into context, Elizabeth Holmes, who founded Theranos, who I recently did a video on and is going through a major court case at the moment, raised in total $1.3 billion for her blood testing business. So FTX Ventures has raised almost three times the amount that Theranos did, but yet nobody's really focusing on this as being an issue. And it is incredible that three individuals owned 100% of that business. And then moving on to the last silo in yellow here, Alameda Research. This was the business that Sam Bankman-Fried started originally. This was his crypto hedge fund before he set up FTX. And you can see here that his ownership is 90%, with Gary Wang holding the other 10%. And the information that's now being released about where the assets for this group are sitting is showing that there are a number of large loans given directly to Alameda Research, which Sam Bankman-Fried owns virtually all of. So let's have a look at some of the details from the filing that's been presented to the courts. Following the initial investigations, it's been stated that FTX had no serious accounting system and that the individual entities did not have their own accounts department and were doing a very poor job of tracking their cash. They lacked an accurate list of bank accounts and signatories and paid insufficient attention to the creditworthiness of banking partners. The result of this is that they don't currently know how much cash is remaining at FTX. In addition to these operational issues, there are also substantial concerns as to the information presented in the audited financial statements, and that the bankruptcy practitioners do not believe it appropriate for stakeholders of the court to rely on audited financial statements as a reliable indication of the financial circumstances. The employment situation at FTX was also similarly chaotic, with debtors being unable to compile a complete list of employees or detail what terms they were working on. FTX lacked many internal and financial controls, including for the disbursement of assets, with requests being approved in a chat channel with supervisors responding with emojis. Corporate funds belonging to the FTX group were used to purchase homes and other items for employees, and many of these transactions lacked documentation and were recorded in the personal names of FTX employees and advisors. FTX digital assets were not appropriately secured, with Sam Bankman-Fried and Gary Wang both having access to assets across all businesses. In addition to this, an unsecured group email account was used as the root user to access confidential private keys and critically sensitive data, potentially contributing to the hack that has resulted in lost FTX assets. And the reference there to private keys relates to the ownership of individual crypto assets. In addition, there were no daily reconciliations of blockchain positions. It stated that the FTX group had billions in investments other than cryptocurrency. However, the main companies in the Alameda and Ventures silos did not keep complete books and records. And as a result, it's expected that this will further lengthen and complicate the recovery process for FTX creditors. In terms of record keeping in FTX corporate governance, it stated that one of the most pervasive failures of the FTX business is the absence of records for decision making. It's claimed that Sam Bankman-Fried often communicated using apps that were set to auto-delete after a short period of time and encouraged his employees to do the same. It was reported before these problems started that FTX had around $16 billion worth of assets under management. However, it's been reported that so far only $740 million of cryptocurrency has been identified. Now, there was a big run on the company in the days leading up to the bankruptcy. It's reported that around $6 billion was withdrawn from customer accounts in the 3 days leading up to the bankruptcy. But even if $6 billion was withdrawn, that should leave $10 billion in assets. And if they can only find 750 million, that's leaving a shortfall of over $9 billion. Now, it's been reported in the press that billions of dollars of assets were loaned by FTX to Alameda Research, And they're now trying to find out whether or not that's the situation, whether there's any documentation to actually back up those loans, and then whether Alameda has that cash itself. The papers show that Alameda Research provided a $2.3 billion loan to a company called Paper Bird Inc., which is an entity controlled entirely by Sam Bankman-Fried. In addition to that, there is a $1 billion loan directly to Sam Bankman-Fried. And in addition to that, there's a $1 billion loan that's been given to Nishad Singh. Now, I'm sure you're fully capable of adding these numbers up yourself, but just to highlight the fact, we've got loans here of $3.3 billion given directly to Sam Bankman-Fried and a company that he controlled, and another $1 billion to Nishad Singh. But the question of what's going on with all of this money and where has it gone doesn't end there, because we need to have a look at what's happened with the ventures business. And the bankruptcy papers show that the venture silo provided a $1.4 billion loan to Alameda Research. And of course, let's remind ourselves that Alameda Research is owned 90% by Sam Bankman-Fried. So this is now starting to get very complicated, because the ventures business, which is a fund, it raises money from its investors to buy other businesses. It shouldn't be lending any money to anybody else. It should just be investing into companies. But it loaned $1.4 billion to Alameda Research, and Alameda Research then gave $3.3 billion directly to Sam Bankman-Fried and a company owned by him. So this starts to make it even more difficult to establish where the actual cash is. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I think what we're seeing now from FTX is absolutely fascinating. We've got an industry professional, a seasoned pro, who's gone into FTX, John Ray, and he's expecting to see all of the documentation and to work out exactly what's been going on, where the money is, and then be able to track it all down. And what he's found is a complete dog's dinner in terms of the way this company has been operated. They don't seem to have any formal record-keeping system. They don't seem to have any formal approval system. Nothing seems to have been recorded in terms of daily reconciliations. Where's the cash? Where's the customer deposits? Why have things been done? So this is going to be an absolute nightmare from John Ray's perspective. And I think what we're seeing here is a business that's been created by an individual. So this happens quite often in business. If you're an entrepreneur, you want to set up your own business, quite often you'll be more focused on the actual business itself, doing what you're good at, rather than all of the paperwork and bookkeeping, accounting, all of those really boring things. And that's why when a company starts to grow, it brings in professionals. So you need a bookkeeper and an accountant and a marketing manager and somebody who's going to keep all of the records and a compliance officer. All of those really boring functions that you get in big corporates. The reason that they exist is that you need to keep really good records and you need to have processes and systems and ways of doing things. What we've got here is an entrepreneurial business that was set up by an individual and a few of his pals. And it would appear that he's brought in lots of industry professionals who are all crypto guys, who obviously aren't really that keen on bookkeeping and all the boring stuff. But what he hasn't done is put good corporate governance in place. So he hasn't got all of the right people doing all of the things that you need to do to make a corporate entity viable. Now, potentially, that could be fine for a short period of time if this was a small business that Sam Bankman-Fried was running himself and he didn't need any external investment. But he went out into the markets and raised $1.8 billion. This is a massive corporate entity. When you compare 1.8 billion to a lot of companies that are on the stock market that are household names, it's much bigger. So you would have expected that this should have been squeaky clean. And the fact that it was only set up around 3 years ago, it had a complete clean slate to start with. So it didn't have a long legacy of lots of acquisitions and all the sort of stuff that Enron had back in the day. This should have been set out from the start as a perfect example of how to run a business. But what we've got is the complete opposite of that. We've got 134 different corporate entities, some of which are based in different countries. We've got companies that are owned by the same individual, different shareholdings, but the majority control retained by Sam Bankman-Fried. We've got money moving between all the different entities in the form of loans. Nobody really knows why those loans have been given, what the money has been used for and where it is now. Nobody can actually track anything down. And the added complication that we've got here is that this is all relating to cryptocurrency. So it's more difficult to be able to find those assets because they can be stored in what's called cold wallets, which are much more difficult to locate. And unless you've got the private key, you can't actually access any of that crypto. So this is quite a complicated situation that John Ray has found himself in. They fired Sam Bankman-Fried because obviously they don't want him anywhere near the business. They don't want his sticky fingers on any further transactions. But being able to find out what's been going on and getting to the bottom of this is going to be very difficult when you've got situations like using apps that delete all of the information after a short space of time. There is no record keeping. That's the digital version of shredding all of your documentation. So back in the day when Enron went down, one of the big things that came out of that case was that a lot of people had started shredding documentation so that there were no records for the bankruptcy guys to come in and be able to go through. So this is the digital version of that. And in fact, it's worse because all of those records were deleted immediately. So there's not even any ledger that you could go to find any track record. It all evaporated at the time. So what's the overall summary here and what are the likely implications? Well, obviously, we're at the start of this investigation. And as John Ray has indicated from some of the statements that he's given, it doesn't look like he's going to get to the bottom of things anytime soon. This looks like a nightmare from his perspective in terms of being able to track and trace all of the movements of cash and find out where it all is now. But I think the overall flavor of what he said indicates that it's likely that there's going to be very high losses here. The majority of the investors that put their money in at the start have written down their investment to zero. And I said at the start of the video that I'd give you an indication as to how much each fund has lost. It's estimated that a fund called Paradigm invested $278 million. Temasek invested $275 million. Sequoia Capital, $214 million. SoftBank, $100 million, and the Ontario Teachers Pension Fund, $95 million. And I think one thing that is absolutely astounding when you look at all of the facts that we're faced with now is that all of those companies put large amounts of capital into this deal without really doing any proper due diligence. Because if they had have done that due diligence, they would have discovered all of the things that John Ray is discovering now. That there were no systems in place, there was no record keeping, and that Sam Bankman-Fried had majority control of all of the companies at the top of this group. And if those funds had done that due diligence and found out that information, I question whether or not they would have gone ahead with these investments. But ultimately, I guess the reason behind making these investments goes back to what Sam Bankman-Fried said at the start of this video, that most people are in this market for speculative gain. It looks like the sort of business where you can make 10 times, 100 times your money if things go well. And that's very attractive to investors. People and institutions get a little bit greedy when they can smell returns like that, and they tend to start overlooking all of the warning signs, the fact that there isn't any control in place, the fact that one individual can make decisions and move billions of dollars without needing to refer to anybody else. All of these things should have been red flags, but they weren't, and everybody invested, and the company has raised over $1.8 billion. It really is quite incredible. So in terms of the final outcome, we don't know exactly how much everybody's going to lose, but it's a fair bet to say that it's likely that people are not going to see very much back from their investment. It could be a 100% write-off for all of the investors and all of the customers. So at this stage, we're talking roughly about $10 billion of customer money and around $2 billion of investment. However, it's likely to be much bigger than that. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that I posted recently that this is having a contagion knock-on impact. So BlockFi, which is a crypto lender and had a strong relationship with FTX, is now preparing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy itself. That business has raised around $1 billion over the course of the last few years. And there are multiple other crypto businesses and crypto coins that are now starting to either suspend all customer withdrawals or suspend their trading. So this could have a massive knock-on impact in the same way as Lehman Brothers did back in 2008 when it caused the global financial crisis. And in terms of whether or not this could have an impact on the real world, well, the answer to that is obviously yes, because the money that we're talking about people losing isn't crypto money. This isn't make-believe currency. This is hard cash that people gave over in exchange for all of these crypto assets. So that hard cash will be lost. People will be losing money, which is obviously bad news. Institutions will be losing money. But the contagion, the knock-on ripple effect, could be felt all across the world. And this, of course, comes at a time when the global economy is sitting in a fragile position. We've got high rates of inflation. We've got rising interest rates. We've got declining GDP in a lot of countries. So the world is teetering on the brink of a recession. And all it needs is something to tip the balance. And this potentially could be the start of something that becomes much bigger and then causes us to all go into a deep recession in 2023. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video. You found it interesting, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.